Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Nile 9 podcast. It's me, Andrea Cleary, joined by Luke Sharkey.
Hello.
Nile is on his holidays, but never fear, we are here to talk about songs from Efterclang, Wiki, and two Irish albums this week from Dermot Kennedy and Girl Band.
A big week.
It's very exciting. So how have you been, Luke? What have you been doing in the past week? Anything interesting?
I have been up to some good stuff, mostly spinning plates here in the office. When Nile's away, there's a lot of plates to spin. Other than that, I was lucky enough to go catch Dylan Moran on Tuesday,
and
which
was
fantastic. Yeah, he's still so funny, which is great. And I'd never seen him before live, which is, so it was really nice to go and catch him.
Where was he playing?
It was in the Vicar Street.
Vicar Street.
And I thought I was going to get that experience. Like, I'd seen in so many stand-up sort of videos throughout the year of like Irish people sitting around the tables in Vicar Street. And I was so looking forward to that.
Yeah.
And then we had a seat up on the balcony. So slightly devastated.
I really like Vicar Street for comedy gigs.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of a nice setting. I think it suits better than the Olympia or worse again, the Three Arena.
Yeah, no, I've never seen a comedy gig in an arena. I feel like the delay on it would be too much.
Yeah.
Like there's too much like time between that. No, I wouldn't be able for it.
Yeah, that's for like the reserve for the superstar comedians like Kevin Hart or whatever.
Comedians that I'm largely uninterested in.
Absolutely, yeah.
So you went to a march?
Yes, I was at the climate strike march last Friday doing it for Greta, and me and about 25,000 other people turned up, Irish people, and it was fantastic. I was a little bit late to the march, but joined everybody at Merrion Square. Heard a lot of the speeches. Really nice to hear. There was quite a big portion of people from sort of primary school, like 10, 11, 12-year-olds, kind of giving little 30-second speeches, which was really nice. A lot of calling out of Leo.
Good.
And the Irish government in general, which I think is well-deserved and thoroughly justified. And it was just really nice. It was really nice to see so many people turn out, and you know, funny enough, for a climate change kind of strike, the weather was absolutely beautiful. The sun was splitting the stones.
I suppose that's probably part of the problem. I don't know how weather works, but it led quite nicely into Culture Night, because it seemed like a real day. I wasn't at the climate strike because I didn't strike from work, because I had to go from work. I'm very sorry. I think there was just a massive buzz and sense of community, like residual from the climate strike. And then when I did join the City Centre for Culture Night that night, it already felt like it was electric in the air. Do you know?
I 100% agree. I think Dublin was alive the whole
it
day.
It was, yeah.
And did you get your share of culture?
I got some culture, yes. Some culture, some not culture. So I started off in the Science Gallery. And they have a exhibition on right now called Perfection. And it's brilliant.
I've heard great things.
It is really, really brilliant. It's about kind of our perception of what perfection is, a lot about societal standards of beauty, about self-image, self-love, self-care, all the selves. And it was genuinely really moving, even though it was obviously packed because it's culture night and you're sort of having this experience while there's like hundreds of people around you. It's not exactly a quiet gallery yeah. moment. But yeah, really, really, really great. And then we moseyed on over to the National Gallery. So it was my idea not really to see that much music on culture night, which is, I know, probably not what you would expect.
Shame,
but
shame.
It's like, I see music a lot during the year,
yeah,
so, but it's not often I get to go to the National Gallery at night time. So decided to go over there for the...
What was going on?
Sorolla, who is a Spanish painter. I probably pronounced that wrong. I didn't know him before, but he's, I think, known as the Master of Light. And it was like beautiful, really kind of impressionistic paintings. And he's known as the Master of Light because when you're looking at one of his paintings, it looks like someone's shining a torch on it or like it's lit in some way, but it isn't. It's just the paint doing that. It's incredible. It looks like it's lit from the back. It's like absolutely incredible. I'd really recommend people to go see it. And it was like, you know, discounted. So I actually got to go to it. And yeah, Culture Night is nice for things like that if you can't really afford to go to like the expensive stuff.
It's a very inclusive festival.
It is.
Which is one of the reasons why I love it so much.
Yeah.
There's no real pay barrier.
No. Like, I mean, I saw that exhibition for a fiver. The Science Gallery one was free.
Yeah.
We got a free drink in the Science Gallery one, which is lovely as well.
Oh, very nice.
And then we went to... We just stumbled upon some hoopla at Dame Street and saw everybody looking up. And we were like, well, what's going on here? And this kind of like bassy tones started and I really didn't know what was going to happen. And then all of a sudden there's these, I think, four or five people up on a crane and then they drop down and they do this like aerial acrobatic stuff. And I thought it was really, really beautiful, but I do wish that I'd watched a video of it after the fact rather than watching it live, because my anxiety was through the roof watching them. Like, I know the professionals, but I was still like, oh my God, really are.
Was there a safety net or?
I don't know. I wasn't up that far. Like, I was back quite a bit and Dame Street was packed. Like,
because they pedestrianized the entire street.
They did.
For the night.
Yeah. And I mean, the irony was you couldn't move on the thing because it was just completely taken over. But it was really, really stunning. It was amazing. And then when they all dropped down, they had like the culture night colours.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it felt like a real kind of moment.
Was there like an LED element to the performance? Like a projection or screen?
Yeah, I think there was on the side of the crane, but I couldn't see it.
Okay.
Because of where I was standing, I could only really see them doing their bit. But like really, really great. You went for a later performance of that and it was
canceled. Yeah, I think there was three and I swung by, because I swung by at 9, I think, the last one, I think. And it had been called off. There was just a sort of a man in a high viz with a megaphone saying, due to high wind, we can't do the show.
I'm glad they made the decision not to go ahead with it.
As if it wasn't edgy enough to begin with. We're going to do it in gale winds.
Yeah, no, thank you. And then I think that's where... largely the culture stopped. And then I went to the Gin Palace for a drink, which is one of the best bars in Dublin. Gin Palace on, what street is it? Abbey Street? Around there. Near Dervish Shopping Centre.
Yeah.
Best gin. And then I went along to Pure Shores, Louise Bruton and Mick LaGalaxy.
That was in Wigwam?
In Wigwam. And that was brilliant. It was my first time there. It was kind of everything I wanted and more. Really inclusive, really brilliant pop tunes, just dance the whole night. And saw our good friend Niall Ryan there at some point in the evening as well.
Yeah, he disappeared from his own gig.
Yeah, you know where he went. That was my culture night. What did you get up
Fantastic.
To?
Fantastic. I was a lot less cool than you.
I
just held it down at Workman's for the Niall Ryan gig.
Okay, that's cool.
We hosted a free gig and we had Silverbacks and GIF and Odd Morris and also TPM's traditional sort of alternative to what they usually do called the Mary Wallopers play. So I was there, kind of held down there for the night. It was fantastic gig and like a lot of footfall, which was fantastic. I think obviously it being free incentivizes people to come and the Workman's was absolutely packed.
Brilliant.
And I think a special highlight was we had the Mary Wallopers play sort of after most of the main bands had wrapped up, and they played, you know, the bar beside the actual venue.
Yeah.
They played like in the space to the left of that, and it was absolutely jammed. Like you just could not, like there was maybe 100, 150 people just squeezed into that space.
That's lovely, because that area is like a little, like little cubby hole or something.
Exactly,
it's very
yeah.
intimate there.
And
yeah.
they just had like a wee small PA system set up, played through that, and it was amazing. Myself, Niall was there, but I he was across the room. He might as well have been a million miles away. There was no way I was ever going to reach him. So I was with one of our other writers, Kelly.
Yes.
And we were like right beside the lads. And
brilliant.
Just a great gig. Great. It was like trad music, but with a real sort of modern, almost punkish aesthetic. It was fantastic.
Brilliant. I've heard such good things about the Mary Wallopers, and I really want to catch them.
I would, anybody listening, I would so recommend really? Mary Wallopers. If you get a chance to see them, go see them.
Okay, great.
So that was my culture night. Not, yeah. not as cultured as yours.
You mentioned before we started recording some news. So I'll preface this by saying that I haven't been at the music news today at all, because I've just been, you know, head down in work or whatever, by saying that there might be some issues with the Kanye West album tomorrow.
So Jesus is King, Kanye West's next album, supposed mm-hmm. to drop tomorrow, all supposed to drop tomorrow. And then a report comes out, and everybody's covered this report, sort of Rolling Stone, Fader, everybody's saying that a source close to a magazine, Variety magazine, is the where the original report came from, has claimed that the album will not be coming out tomorrow. Another delay. Kanye West's album has delays. Another news, water is wet.
Mm-hmm.
Except there's a twist here, and a very interesting twist. Kim Kardashian, who is, you know, apart from being Kanye West's wife, his de facto publicist at this yeah. point, has retweeted a tweet with a picture from a strange Twitter account. We'll get onto that later.
Yeah.
Saying that the album is still coming out. It says, the tweet says, 2 more days, Jesus is King. And a picture of what looks like one of the Kardashian West children pointing up the finger saying, 2.
So this is a strange story because, well, I'm like, it's not that surprising to hear that, you know, there's going to be a delay with a Kanye album
yeah.
or that there's a little bit of a question mark about the album. But it's, I guess, the lack of clarity from anybody. Like, and then tell me about this Twitter account, because this is
so
wild.
This is just a Twitter account called Colin. And
is it
it's
at Colin?
It's at Colin. It's at Colin AGS. And this man, or this woman, it could be, we don't know, it's a totally anonymous, has 2,500 Twitter followers, 2 of which are Kanye West and Kim Kardashian.
So that's wild, because Kanye doesn't follow anybody.
Yeah, which is just wild. And all this Twitter account, this anonymous Twitter account does is post about sort of Kim Kardashian and Kanye West and retweet stuff from them, about them. And he, and or she, we actually don't know, has put up this picture saying, it's out in 2 days. And Kim Kardashian, almost in spite of the report saying the album isn't coming out, has reposted onto her Twitter account. It's so strange.
So she retweeted this tweet after the piece came out.
After the story broke, saying, the story basically said that Def Jam, who are Kanye West's label, who everybody knows Kanye has a ton of issues with, went to Kanye's Wyoming gaff and had a meeting. Everybody's being very tight-lipped about what happened in the meeting. But the end result was that after this meeting, the album wasn't coming out tomorrow. There was a delay. So obviously there was some sort of friction or disagreement about the album. Maybe they weren't expecting it to be gospel themed. I do think it's going to be a gospel album.
Yeah, I would assume
Jesus
so.
Is King.
I'm hoping it is.
Because people had originally billed it as Jesus Take 2.
Mm.
And I think when it was called The Andy, I believed that more so
Me
than...
Me too, yeah.
I don't know if it's the same album. But apparently it's not coming out. And then once that story broke, Kim went and retweeted this tweet, which flies directly in the face of that story. And who do you believe? Like an anonymous source or Kanye West's wife? It's so strange.
It's, yeah, it's weird because I guess the thing is we haven't heard from Kanye
yeah.
about this album once really. Like there's no, when the album was announced, it was via Kim Kardashian's Twitter.
Yeah.
A picture of the track list with just Jesus is King September 27th yeah. or whatever it was. And there's been nothing from Kanye. Like, obviously, you're not expecting a whole lot of promotion, but it's just, it's striking me as strange now that there's the day before, there's all this, like, dubious...
Is it, isn't.
Is this the promotion?
Yeah.
Is this it?
This is some avant-garde promotion, if it is the promotion, very 21st century. Is this what would happen to all artists, though, if they just didn't have social media presence to say what was actually going on? I mean,
yeah,
like this, the big voice missing from this whole debacle is Kanye. Like, he hasn't said anything about it. And I wonder if there weren't, like, if you, like, with the likes of Frank Ocean and stuff like that, if you weren't active on social media, people can just say anything and break a story about you and you're not going to come out and say it's not true.
Mm.
It's crazy.
I just find this Colin thing very strange. Kanye follows 266 people.
And they're all, like, super mega famous stars. Yeah. Or like fashion designers and stuff.
This person has 2,000 followers.
This person has 2,500 followers, and this is one of them. No information. Like, we're just going to throw it out. A hot take. Is it like a second Kanye account?
Is it Kanye?
A secret Kanye account?
See, that's what I love so much about this story, is that I'm so excited. It combines all my favorite things, Kanye West and Kim Kardashian, and conspiracy theories.
It's wicked.
So I don't know. Yeah, I guess we're obviously going to have to wait and see tomorrow if the album comes out.
Yeah.
What are you expecting from it?
From the album, I expect it to be amazing.
Do you?
Absolutely, yeah. I think he seems to have spent the last year kind of getting right. And also, very importantly, actually continually playing music live. He's like, he's doing the Sunday service thing relentlessly across the country. And I know there's always a big question mark when people find God. And they do that album, or they do that stage in their lives, is always a big, oof.
Yeah.
But I think it will be a gospel album, a gospel-themed album. I don't know in what way. How do you square that with, like, his releases last year were so sexual, all the stuff he did last, and then it's like all of a sudden it's Jesus is King. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like Kanye has always been a spiritual artist and a, like, a in ways a religious artist. Like, I think God has always been there in his music. So I'm trying to stop myself from expecting an album of Ultralight Beam, because that's what I want. I know that that's what you want. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Like, you know, obviously variations of that, but that level of kind of spiritual connectedness to God, whatever it was that Chance was trying to do. On his, let's just his call a spade a spade, the failure of an album that he had.
His wifey expedition.
Exactly, yeah, the I Love My Wife album. So I don't know. I don't know what to expect in terms of collaborations. If it's going to be, I hope it isn't. I hope there's not too many collaborations on it. Mostly just because I have big album release collaboration fatigue at this stage.
Yeah, it's become such a thing in 2019.
Isn't
and 2018 as well, 2019 especially, just so many superstar releases with, like, everybody's on it.
Yeah, like I was getting a bit sick of, like, pop albums coming out and it's that artist, but it's also just here's 10 tracks with 10 other artists on it. I'm just getting a bit tired of it. And then the Lana Del Rey album came out with, like, very, very, like, minimal collaboration on that, and I was like, yeah, no, this just works better for a big pop release. So I think that's why I might be a little bit nervous about, like, a lot of collaboration on the album. Having said that, I think Kanye more times than not tends to do well.
He sticks the landing.
Yeah,
mostly.
Yeah, and he's not afraid to give the best verses to other people, or to let other people do their best on his tracks.
I think the most iconic Kanye lines are often the worst lines in the song.
Oh, absolutely.
If you have a track of Kanye just spitting bars, there's always going to be a couple of lines that you get, like, you know, you left the fridge open and someone took a sandwich. You're always going to get one of those, and they're the ones, you know, nobody goes for it. They're straight out of Kanye's soul. They're the beautiful lines, you know what I mean?
Does he have a ghostwriter? You think so?
Oh, he has many, I think. Yeah. I think he has many. And I think you can tell when it's, like, real Kanye versus maybe the slightly more polished, like, stuff, you know?
Okay, yeah.
I know, like, my beautiful dark twisted fantasy. One day I will actually say the acronym for that correctly, because I always mix up the adjectives.
Oh, yeah.
in what order they come. But I know there was a big team on that, like, in terms of producing arrangements and in the lyrics. It was like a whole...
And that's your favorite of his albums.
That's my favorite album of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of okay, though, isn't it? Because Kanye, it's not... For me, anyway, it's not so much his rapping that I love. No. You know, that's like way down on the list of things that I love about Kanye. I love him so much as a producer.
Yeah.
Like, I just think that he creates such interesting worlds in his music. And I think he's a great albums artist. When he gets it right, he's a really, really good albums artist. And so I hope when you're coming out with something called Jesus is King,
wow,
like, it's such a powerful statement. I'm expecting a lot. I'm afraid to expect a lot. And now I'm afraid it's not going to happen.
Yeah, well, I suppose I could stomach it not happening tomorrow, as long as it's not a Yandy thing where it just doesn't happen, and then it just never happens.
I know. I mean, remember we got 5 albums?
Yeah, last year.
Remember those days?
But I remember after The Life of Pablo, he said he had a video game and 2 albums in the works.
Mm-hmm.
There's an album he was supposed to have called TurboGrafx-32. And that just never happened. I'm still waiting for TurboGrafx.
Oh,
I want
Drop
that album.
TurboGrafx-32, can you? What the hell?
But whether it's tomorrow or in a couple of months' time, I'm sure it's going to be at least an interesting listen.
Yes, definitely. Will we talk about some music that has come out?
Absolutely.
Okay, what's our first track on our Songs of the Week? It's your pick.
So, this first track is from Danish group Efterklang, indie rock group. And this is taken from their new album, Altid Salmon, and the track is Supertanker. So we'll have a little listen.
Great.
Larmen hænger for enden af kar. Supertanker står i vej.
So, that was Supertanker by Efterklang, taken from their new album, Altid Salmon. I've really been enjoying this album. I think I've been on a little bit of an autumnal vibe binge. Been really...
You are talking to the right person, my friend.
I've been embracing the season, changing my colour schemes and also changing my music listening habits, getting into kind of slower, more cinematic, down-tempo music. You might even go as far to call it moody.
Mm-hmm.
This track is one of the singles off the new album. Really great album listen, but this track in particular I think stands out as a single. The lead vocalist has kind of a great, kind of very ethereal, very nasal way of singing, which I really, really enjoy. And it's just built upon really nice. There's horns in there, really kind of quiet, meandering guitars, the kind of moody bass line. It's really, really nice. Really nice track.
I think moody is definitely the it hits the nail on the head with that. I do really, really like his vocals. I don't know them at all. I only know this track. And I like the way the track isn't afraid to just kind of be 2 tracks.
Yeah.
Like it sort of just switches up towards the end. It's long enough, isn't it? It's like 6 minutes or something.
Yeah, it's long enough.
Yeah, it's not afraid to just be like, okay, now we're doing this thing. They seem like a really interesting band. I'm going to definitely check out that album.
Yeah.
Especially if it's got an autumn vibe to it.
Oh, it's very autumnal. Mm. And I think it's nice to listen to music that isn't in English. The lyrics aren't in English. I think sometimes that works. And I think if you only listen to English-speaking music, you miss out on a lot of stuff from like Scandinavia or from parts of Europe that aren't English-speaking. You miss out on a lot of great music.
Yeah, so it goes beyond Sigur Rós, people.
Yeah.
There's more out there.
Yeah. So moving on, our next track is from the collaborative album between Quiveen O'Reilly and Thomas Bartlett, also known as Doveman. It's a self-titled album, and the pair have worked together plenty in their efforts as The Gloaming. This track is called Wanderer, and we'll give you a listen to it now. So, what did you think about that?
I found this really, really moving. I always find it hard when it's The Gloaming or it's, you know, variations thereof to kind of put into words what it is that I feel about it. But I think I experienced, as close as I've ever experienced ASMR while listening to this track.
Yeah.
It wasn't quite ASMR, but there was something there. I love that tone of how you can hear like every single string on the bow when it's going across the, I don't know if you technically call it a violin or a fiddle in this situation, but it's such a beautiful track that really, really takes its time. I feel like they're great at trusting their listeners to just give themselves over and bring them on a little small journey. And I mean, I was listening to it in the lashing rain on my way here, and it was the thing that got me through walking in the lashing rain. It was actually a nice little moment I had on my way over. But yeah, I think this is really beautiful, really strong, and really kind of trusting of its listener.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think the album, because it's so understated, and the song, especially because it's so understated in a way, it's been kind of slept on a little bit. Like, the album came out a couple of weeks ago, and certainly I maybe gave it a precursory listen and then, you know, move on, listen to something else. And it's only, you know, going back and taking the time to listen to it that it's really kind of captured my attention and my imagination. It's really fantastic. And I think it's interesting, I'm thinking about how it differs to the Gloaming's material, you know, because with the Gloaming, you have just a slightly more stronger conservative trad influence in there. Yeah. Martin Hayes, especially, it's all he's known. Whereas Cuivine, I know especially, he likes to kind of take that trad sound right out into more contemporary classical sounds, which I think this album is great at. And I think Thomas Bartlett, who is also Dove Man, who plays piano for the Gloaming, he gets to be far more expressive in the way that he plays. And this song is a great example of that. Like, the piano is such a strong influence in this song. It's, yeah.
It is. I think it's a bit more cinematic than you'd usually get from the Gloaming, say. I could definitely see this being like an accompaniment to some kind of like short video or something. You know, it was really kind of impressionistic, and but not, like you said, not in that more traditional trad way. Definitely more of like contemporary, expressive, just going along with an idea way. It sounded like it was improvisation, which I liked a lot, because it felt like it started with one idea and then it just grew and expanded, not into this big massive sound or anything, but just it just grew on its own little journey, which I just thought was really lovely.
Really sweet.
Very nice.
So our last song is going to be Eggs by New York based MC Wiki. So let's have a listen.
Young Caesar, the crowd pleaser, the town leader, in the round theater, when the town needed most, you assassinate my character with all the shit that you say. Et tu, Brute? Stabbed in the back, touche, through your shade, but they wrote plays about me, name me after the fade. You too.
That was Eggs by Wiki, and that track is produced by Madlib. What did you think?
I really, really, really like this. It's so high energy.
Yeah.
And humorous and funny. I love the flow in it. I love the tone of his voice. It reminded me of Doom's Food album. I love how it's impossible to Google, because
Wiki eggs
like nothing on it.
You're into like the seventh page of results.
Exactly. And you're like, oh, there it is. Really, really cool, high energy song. Lyrically, like the flow is really, really cool. He hits like a really nice stride in the middle-ish, where he does kind of remind me a little bit of Doom in the way that his words are kind of flowing. But you're obviously a fan of this, yeah.
Yeah, I love this. He had a song off his debut solo release called Mayor, which I caught through probably a Spotify Discover Weekly. And that I love that track, and many people probably know that track. He's actually a part of a band or a group, hip-hop group, called Rat King, which is perhaps he's most well known for. But this song in particular, I really like. I think you just can't really go wrong with Madlib. I mean, like, the album he did with Freddie Gibbs earlier this year is so good as well. He's probably one of the best hip hop producers out there. And I don't know, I love the MC's voice, and I love the flow. Yeah, and lyrically, I think it's great. And I love that his voice does kind of, it's not like a lot of rappers try to go quite smooth with their delivery and flow, where, you know, Wiki's voice like really pops out of the mix.
It's kind of frantic or something.
Yeah, it's so animated.
Yeah.
Which I really enjoy. It's kind of a nice, refreshing change of pace. And also it's not like there's nothing to, it's a kind of a no frills approach to spitting bars. Like he's just rapping. There's no like mad kick drums that like consume the mix, or like mad hi hats and all this kind of theatrical stuff.
And it's not all that cool.
Yeah.
It's just sort of like, yeah, energetic and like excited sounding.
Yeah.
It's not like, here's a cool rap song. So it's a big week for albums. It's a huge week for Irish albums, and we are going to be tackling two of them.
Absolutely.
We're going to be talking about both Girl Band and Dermot Kennedy. Up first is, I think, no, I'm going to withhold my opinion on it, where It's Girl Band, the Talkies.
Out of pain, table said, Dr. Apple, Savage May, needs a minute. Got a minute. Feeling wild or sick, going nowhere, a medicine, needs a minute. Got a minute.
Absolutely. And again, yeah, two albums this week that you could imagine when the Choice Prize rolls around, names would be at least considered strongly. Two big, totally opposite albums, but two huge Irish bands. Girl Band's Talkies, their second album. It's fantastic to be able to talk to somebody about this. I've been cooped up with this album for the past month listening to it, and obviously nobody else has heard it, so it's nice to be able to chat to somebody about it. I'm a big, big fan. The album, I was lucky enough to chat to guitarist Alan Duggan beforehand, and he kind of walked me through the process. The album was kind of written over the space of 3 years, you know, with their hiatus kind of over a year that they had to take for, you know, mental health reasons, kind of right in the middle there. And they kind of recorded it in three separate outings. Ballintubert House was where most of the recording was done in November of 2018. And I think the album... I think it's really, really strong. I would say, and I've been dying to say this to somebody, I would say it's probably my favourite Irish release of the year so far.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
High praise.
Yeah.
So I think with Girl Band, Niall and I have talked a lot about Girl Band on the podcast in kind of various guises, whether it's about their singles or just about the Irish music scene in general, or even, you know, when you're talking about bands like Fontaines DC and The Murder Capital. Girl Band have been a name that has come up over and over and over again as being, you know, this high influence on this new generation, really, of rock, mostly male rock, but as just kind of being this like starting point. And I remember when all the talk about Fontaines DC, especially when all of that was kind of breaking, and you know, they were being written about in like the New York Times, and everything was like really, really, really huge. I was just thinking, what's going to happen when Girl Band come back, you know? What's it going to be like? Because I think that they're returning to a different scene now. They're returning to the scene as having influenced quite a lot of it. And I think for the first time ever, their contemporaries kind of in a way sound like them. So it positions them differently, I think. But what I was delighted about with this album is that, much like the first time I listened to their first album, or the first time I've heard any of their music for the first time, I just had such a unique response to it that I don't get with other music. And it's not always nice, it's not always enjoyable, but it's always really, really evocative and emotive, and it always really does just kind of punch you hard.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, that coupled with the idea that in the same way as you, I've had the album for a while now, and it's just been this kind of little secret that I've just been listening to, and that's sort of, you know, underlined the personal experience that I've been having with the album, because I was dreading the discourse around it, to be honest. I was dreading them coming back and then everybody having an opinion on this and that and the other, and just kind of having a repeat of conversations we've had this year over and over and over again about different bands. So it actually was really, really nice to get it early and to really just spend time with it on my own.
Yeah.
Because I think that's how Girl Band... I think that's how they work best, even though contradictory, when you're at a live show and it's that big kind of, you know, communal, like pulsating energy that you get from an entire room of people. I still think that when you listen to Girl Band, you go through something quite personal.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know, maybe just me.
No, I totally agree.
Yeah.
It is, and it's strange that such a hype is built up around them considering how vastly uncommercial the entire album is. Mm. It's not catchy in any way. It's never something that's going to sell to the masses.
No.
And in that way, I think they're completely opposite to Fontaines, especially, and The Murder Capital They Don't Search share similarities there. Mm. It's just like, they're the only three famous guitar bands in Ireland at the moment. You know, it's kind of that vibe. But I think definitely, it is the girl band, especially. It's not glitzy. It's a very much a personal listen. And I think, like, I mean, I don't know. I really enjoy the album, and I've been very lucky to be exposed to it so much. I think, like, even the opening track, which is Prolix, which is the sound of Dara, the lead singer. He's just having a panic attack, and they record that. And you listen to something like that, and I just don't know anybody else who's making music like that. And like you said, it's not necessarily always a very pleasant response that you have to their music, but it is very unique. And
it's challenging, for sure.
Oh, it's definitely challenging. Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of tracks. I know Salmon of Knowledge and maybe Prefab Castle, maybe Laggard. Both of those tracks are 7-8 minutes long and really dense instrumentals, very abrasive. And there's one of the tracks, I think it's Salmon of Knowledge, it's just Dara for about 2 minutes going like, Jesus, Jesus, just over and over. It's almost like, I feel like their music is quite, to me, it's quite humorous. And it's like, they're in on the joke though. It's not like the joke is above them. They're super in on that joke. And it's almost like they're like kind of giggling at the people, like creating so much hype about them. And they're just like, we're just going to stick in this 2 minute bit of me saying Jesus to wind people up.
I think that's what I enjoyed a lot about this, is that, you know, musically, it's obviously accomplished and complex.
Yeah.
But it doesn't kind of stand 10 feet tall and ask to be taken oh so seriously.
Absolutely.
Do you know, there's no, like, I never feel like, I never felt while listening to it that I had to really, you know, put on my musicology hat and think, you know, oh, well, what he's doing there is very interesting. And isn't that an interesting take on this? It's just an assault of feeling. And some of that feeling is humor. And some of it is also, you know, panic and anguish. And it's sort of like breaking down all of the base human emotions. It made me think a lot about Thom Yorke's album from earlier this year, Anima, in that I felt like it just sort of passed over having a conversation with you, the listener, and just gets straight into, like, your subconscious. And it doesn't waste time trying to, you know, it doesn't waste time trying to be clever or trying to have, like, you know, I'm not saying it doesn't have interesting turns of phrases, but it's not hung up on being clever.
Absolutely not.
Like, the song about the palindromes, that's obviously very, very funny.
Yeah.
But it's not like this kind of beard stroking, like,
it's not aloof in any way.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything about it is 100% sincere. And I think that that's what makes them such a believable hardcore act, given that hardcore has kind of, as a genre that, you know, people are actively engaging with. It's been a while since I've had, like, all of the hardcore bands that I have listened to throughout my whole life have all been bands that were big before I was born.
Yeah, long, long ago.
Yeah, a really long time ago. Whereas now it's kind of like, I don't know. Like, musically, there's obviously, it is a bit different. I did find it a little bit more accessible melodically than their previous album. There are moments in it where, like, there's a groove here, there's a clean melodic sound there. Yeah,
you even get a melody out of Dara every now and again.
Yeah, but then it always ends up just, it's kind of like there's too much going on at once.
Yeah.
Not in a bad way, but it ends up sounding like a pair of runners and a washing machine at the end. It's just like, bam, you know, too much is going on at once, which is what happens in your own head all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what the exact feeling is, do you know?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And in that way, the album is so self-aware. I mean, you definitely could, as you said, put on your musicology cap and talk about, like, you know, the guitar tone and Going Norway, that pulsing sound, and you could spend so long getting into that. But I think ultimately the band are saying, Like all of this hype and all of this, like getting in, assessing music like that just doesn't matter. It's about how it makes you feel and how you experience it, and everything else is kind of secondary to that, which I love them for. And I think when you hear people talk about girl bands, sometimes people preach them from some sort of pedestal, like they're the second coming of Christ. It's almost like you get you in your head, or you imagine a totally different band to what they end up actually sounding and being like.
Yeah,
it's totally different. They're just not those people at all. I don't think they're interested in being those people.
No.
And it's very honest, sometimes very funny, sometimes tragically sad music.
Yeah, and I think that also goes far in the lyrics as well. Like it's not, the lyrics aren't really asking to be understood. They're just kind of asking to be heard.
Yeah.
It's like, this is what I have to say. I'm not asking you to like pour through it as if it's a Joyce novel. No shade. But I just want to be heard. Like this is just the experience of what this song is, what's happening with this song while it's being written. And it's that sort of, I don't know, like immediacy in it that I find so moving about it, you know?
Absolutely.
And I've like I said, I've always had this strange, and I've said before on the podcast that I've always had this strange relationship with girl band, in that like, I don't know, I do find that it like listening to them moves me, but like it moves me physically as well. It's like I have physical reactions to listening to them, and this album turned that up to 11. Like that first track I found really difficult at times.
That track should almost come with a trigger warning.
It's genuinely nuts. Yeah, like as an anxiety sufferer, as somebody who gets panic attacks, like it's just the intimacy that I have with that particular breathing technique, I felt just so close to it. And I think that like, that's what I want my hardcore music, but also just music in general. That's what I really, really want from it, is that I want to be challenged. And it's not like it's a triggering moment, but it's almost like an externalization of something, and seeing something or hearing something that happens to other people and therefore making you feel not only connected with the person or with the band or with the music, but making you kind of feel less alone in this thing. And I know that the band themselves don't really talk that much anymore about, you know, mental health and like publicly, like to journalists or anything. But I think that everything that you need to know from them is here, it's here in the music. And it's like, I'm not interested in hearing anything other than this, because this is, I think, like one of the most vital and accurate expressions of my experience of kind of mental health difficulties and anxiety disorder and that kind of thing. And
I think definitely the lyrics are worth highlighting throughout.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the strange things about them is that Dara didn't use any pronouns at all throughout the album. So there's no I, me, he, she, we, which gives it a dissociative vibe at times.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some of the lyrics, and like you said, they're, I don't think they're meant to be read literally. I think it's supposed to be more of almost like an impressionist thing, like the feeling you get when you read the lyrics as opposed to the actual meaning of each word. But there's a great sort of, one of the couplets that's been stuck in my head for so long is like, it's in Going Norway, and it's, he's like, it's Christ, that's mental. What is normal? Christ, that's mental. What is normal?
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like, I almost imagine like something you would say out loud, saying like, oh, Christ, that's mental. And then like the internal dialogue you'd have in your head being like, what is normal? In my head, I almost imagine it like that. And it's so, I don't know. Again, that's something I didn't get the first time or the second or the third time that I listened to the track. It was kind of like 20 listens in. I was like, oh shit, is that? And and again, it's not, there's no prescribed meaning. That's definitely not what that's probably not what he meant to intend from that. Mm. But it's great that the lyrics are so, like that they have that kind of freedom of association that you can kind of bring your own interpretation to it. And it's equally as valid. It's really fantastic. And again, miles away from what the other rock bands in Ireland are doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I really like not knowing who the narrator is in the song. And because you get lovely moments like that where you're imagining a dialogue between an external and an internal person,
yeah,
without having it explained to you.
Yeah.
You know, without kind of falling back on any cliches that might have associated with it, whether it's like, you know, the pitching up one of the vocals or having it as a duet in some way or anything. They avoid, I mean, it's like they've never heard of cliche. Like they sound like nothing else, you know, or they sound like other things that have come before, but just completely in their own way. What I'm saying is that they're original.
Very much so, which is damn hard to do.
It is, you know, and I think there's a lot of bands like Irish and abroad that we talk about as being like originals these days, but I don't know anyone really who's doing it better than
absolutely. And they absolutely don't wear their influences on their sleeves in their music. Like, obviously they have a lot of influences, but it'd be hard to pick them out.
Yeah.
I mean, Alan talked to me about techno.
Yeah.
I'm just like, okay.
That's yeah. Out today if you're listening on Friday, so let us know what you think. I think, and if it's your first time listening to Girl Band, good luck and God bless and Godspeed, I guess. But yeah, really, really happy to have an album this week that I'm super excited about.
Yeah.
We have another album out this week.
Absolutely.
By young Dermot Kennedy.
Absolutely. Ireland's kind of one of the big emerging acts at the moment internationally.
Yeah.
And his debut album, Without Fear, and it's cheating to say that the Dermot Kennedy album was an album that was just a collection of singles. This is his debut studio album, Without Fear.
Great. Will we take a listen to one of the songs from it?
Absolutely. This is going to be Moments Past.
It's all down to the loss we learned, knew for a long time for all it's worth. I wanted to run to you.
That was Moments Past, an oldie but a goodie, I guess, from Dermot Kennedy. Luke, tell me about this. Tell me about this track.
So Moments Past is was the single that introduced me to Dermot Kennedy, the single that I heard and actually was like, wow, this guy is a serious, serious artist. I was going through a breakup at the time, so I definitely have a sentimental attachment to it, definitely.
It.
But I fell for that song and fell for Dermot Kennedy at that point, hook, line, and sinker. I'm a little bit, and I know we have a slightly differing, I know we have a vastly differing opinion on this album, so I want to get to that. But I want to put in a slight caveat here that I'm a little cheesed up that this album has songs like Moments Past and sort of some of the tracks he's done for Power Over Me as well, some of his older singles, because he did release a compilation called Dermot Kennedy about 2 or 3 months ago, where he said, like, I just want to put this out here. These are all my released singles to date. This just marks the end of one chapter, and the next chapter is going to be all my new material. But there's 3 or 4 songs that turned up on this album that are taken off Dermot Kennedy, which I'm a little cheesed off about.
Okay, you feel like you haven't got your money's worth with this?
I just feel like, I know he's a prolific songwriter. I know he could whip more out of the bag. You don't got to stick with the old stuff, but
sure.
Who knows what
I guess with a debut, you want to get the big ones on there as well, though. Yeah.
So, what do you think?
So, Dermot Kennedy, I have always, I guess, struggled a little bit with. It's hard for me to pinpoint what it is that kind of stops me from giving myself over to him. And I think that's probably my issue, is that I've never really felt the need to really, I've never felt that connected with him. And so I went into this album hoping that I would find something in it to grab onto. And I think what I found was his voice, which I guess is probably like, well done, Captain Obvious, Andrea, Dermot Kennedy has a good voice. But I do really think that his voice is, it's something else. Like, it's really, really powerful, really beautiful tone. And I just wish that I liked the songs more.
Yeah.
So that I can enjoy the voice.
What exactly? Okay, yeah, his voice is fantastic.
It's so good.
Not only is it so strong, it's so expressive as well. It's never like a flat delivery. But like, what is it about the songs? Are they too poppy? Is it too acoustic guitar guy?
Yeah, it's... So I guess it's that... So the album is very, very polished and produced very, you know, cleanly. And
definitely.
Like, really squeaky clean. And I think that was an issue I had with it. I think with his voice, it's so gravelly, it's so expressive. I would have liked to hear a bit more grit in the music to go along with it. I liked the first track a lot. I liked the kind of, were they kind of like pitched up vocals in the background of it? It was a bit of a Bon Iver
definitely
moment. Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm on board with this. And then I didn't really hear much else of that throughout the album. So I was a little bit disappointed by that. I think that's a lovely sound for him. And I wish that he had stayed in that kind of pool a little bit more. I think Power Over Me is obviously, you know, it's a banger. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Call a spade a spade. It's an absolute banger. But there's there's not much here that I wouldn't be surprised to have heard on an Ed Sheeran album.
Oh, I knew something new you were going to go there. Okay.
And I feel like that's a really obvious thing to say. And it's, yeah, and I'm sorry for saying it, but I genuinely do mean it. And I don't necessarily mean it in like I think Ed Sheeran's a great songwriter.
Yeah.
But he writes songs like this, and I don't know if these are the songs I want to hear from Dermot Kennedy's voice. I think I just want something a little bit grittier.
Fair enough.
Something a little bit like to catch on to. But Luke, look, prove me wrong.
I know. I think like as I get the last of the steam out my ears, I think it is a valid criticism of his work. He does occupy that same genre of guy on acoustic guitar songs.
Yes.
And I think that's a totally valid criticism. And I think there is lots of people who won't get over that in his music. And that is so fair. Mm. And I think there are points on this album that he does fall further into that zone. I think Rome particularly, and I think Outnumbered, which is the single that he's going with right now, the lead single, it's what he did in his BBC session. That particularly is just weak sauce. Really kind of by the numbers, acoustic-y pop. And I think he is in his worst moments capable of writing songs like that. So yeah, but while I accept that his music,
which isn't necessary, like, I mean, if you're writing great pop songs,
yeah,
but just not good Dermot Kennedy songs, yeah, you're probably doing all right.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think while it is totally fair to say that his music occupies that same space, I think for me, he stands a couple of cuts above the likes of Ed Sheeran or any of those,
Capaldi,
like,
or,
yeah, Vance, yeah, Joy, any of those, yeah, people who have come before, kind of, I think. And for me, a lot of it is he does try different things. And musically, there are those sort of like those Bon Iver influences there. There's definitely a hip hop influence in the way he programs his drums. And I know the drummer from Melty Brains is a full-time drummer and they do an excellent job live.
Mm.
I think for me, though, and this is a hill that I'm going to die on. I already know I'm going to die on this hill, but it's his lyrics. I love his lyrics. And I think they're not faux deep. I think Kennedy actually has a poetic diction. And I think he actually has... The stakes in his lyrics are always so high. It's always life and death, the way he writes about everything. It's, you know, it's always the grandest stuff. Even if he could be talking about just having a falling out, like a regular falling out with his partner, and he makes it sound like it's like, you know, the battle of the ages, or like he really puts his heart onto his sleeve in his lyrics. And I think he, for me, most of the time, sticks the landing in how he expresses it. To me, I don't cringe. I really buy into it. Mm. And I'm a cynic. I really have no time for this kind of music generally, but I've not necessarily through this album, but even before, I've fallen for Dermot Kennedy. I really think that he is special and he does stand out in that genre. And I think, like, in a world of, like, rappers talking out their necks and indie bands being more aloof than the average kind of conversation in the smoking area of the Workman's Club, it is fantastic to have somebody like Dermot Kennedy actually just belt it out.
Yeah.
And it really, I don't know, I fall for that and I buy into it. I think this album was kind of the fundamental trajectory of how does he go from being acoustic singer-songwriter to a big pop song artist, getting that big pop sound. Mm. So, like, you know, his early releases were really just like something you might hear somebody busking on Grafton Street. No, they'd be the best busker on Grafton Street at any time of the day, but it was that kind of song.
Mm.
Whereas the productions and the arrangements on this album are trying to get that bigger sound, more anthemic. You could see it in, like, the Three Arena or even possibly further in his career in a stadium. It is that sound. It does occupy that space. But I think for the most part, he really sticks to landing. And yeah, even like, I'm so such a jaded cynic, but I really get an emotional response from his music. I fall for it. Like, yeah, I really do.
I think you're spot on when you say that his lyrics are the most heightened life or death thing that's ever, you know, it's all very, I guess, dramatic.
Oh, definitely.
But I think when you couple that with how dramatic his voice is and you're doing that for 13 tracks, it just sort of, for me, I need ebbs and flows there. Like, yeah. I need peaks and troughs. Like, yeah. I think maybe a couple of tracks interspersed here and there that were a little bit more, maybe a little less high stakes, yeah, and a little bit more low key. Yeah, yeah, maybe something like that, or something of that early sound. Like I said earlier, something maybe a bit more gritty, a little bit more, like authentic-y sounding, a little bit more singer-songwriter-y and less singer-songwriter making a pop album.
Yeah, okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I see that.
I've absolutely no doubt that, you know, he's, like, nothing I say is going to stop him becoming absolutely massive.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he's already, like, he's got stands.
Oh, he's huge.
He's huge. Like, and I guess I can understand why he's huge in the same way that I can understand why Lewis Capaldi's huge.
Yeah.
Who I like a lot as a guy. But I think maybe there's just a disconnect between me and this particular style of music. And I don't want to be kind of derivative and say, you know, oh, it's just another white guy with an acoustic guitar, because some of my favorite artists are white guys with acoustic guitars. But yeah, I think maybe it's maybe how polished the album is.
I agree with you, removal step between us. It was that ambition of trying to make it a big pop album that in many ways accounts for some of the album's biggest flaws.
Yeah.
I think it would have benefited from a little more dirt, a little more grit.
I think so.
I think the pitched vocals and the auto-tune sounds are something he should definitely be exploring.
I think so too. I think those were my favorite moments in the album. Those were the moments where I was like, I want even a whole song of this,
yeah,
you know, because they just come at little moments and I never really felt like he explored that sound fully.
Yeah.
Maybe in the future, maybe this is the album that's going to break and then he can go off and do his experimental second album, I guess. Probably won't, but
I think, and you're right, there is an emotional fatigue you get from, you know, 11, 12 songs of 12, 13 even, of, you know, life and death.
Yes.
Definitely there's an emotional fatigue there.
Yeah, especially when it's paired with such a dramatic kind of vocal, which again, I think he's probably one of the best singers making music in Ireland now.
Oh yeah.
If not the best.
Him,
like,
and Hozier, Lisa Hannigan, probably in terms of singers.
Really stunning vocal. I remember talking to No Encore's Dave Hanratty about Dermot Kennedy before, and he was saying to me, I was sort of expressing that, you know, I haven't really gotten it yet. And he suggested that I go see him live.
Oh my God, he's so good.
Yeah. Your face lit up like a Christmas tree.
Oh my God.
So yeah, see, so I think I should see
Have
him
you seen
live.
Him?
No.
I went to see him when he did the Vicar Street last year, and I was still kind of on the fence about him. People wept openly.
Yeah.
Like people, I was by myself, completely sober, reviewing a gig.
Yeah.
And
carnage.
Crowds around me were holding each other and weeping. Wow. People being like really emotional stuff, like, oh, mum would love this and all this kind of stuff, like weeping.
Wow.
And like he is just, at this point, he was just belting it out. And it was, I'd never seen anything like it.
Really?
I've never seen an artist do something. I'd never seen, in my experience, that happen at a gig. It was nuts.
So I think, I have to see him live to form my like full opinion on him as an artist. I've been told that by a few people that you do, like everybody feels something when they see him live, I guess. But as a standalone album, I think that this was disappointing for me in terms of being me hoping that it was going to be the album that gets me into him.
Yeah.
But I think that's okay. I think for fans of him, like yourself and like all of his stans, this is what they want.
Yeah.
I guess. Is that it's got a lot of heart in it. It's got big bangers in it, and it's got that voice.
For fear of moments stolen, I don't wanna say goodnight, but I still see you in the morning. Still know your heart and still know both your eyes. I could have told you about the long nights, how no one loves the birds that don't rise. So you can tell the heroes go hide. My sense of wonder is just a little tired.
So there are two big albums. We have Girl Bands The Talkies, and we have Dermot Kennedy's Without Fear, both released today. Have a listen, let us know what you think.
Maybe Kanye's released today, we don't know. We just don't know.
If Kanye is released today, I will not be seen. I will be below ground with my headphones and my Spotify.
Another album that's being released today is 65 Days of Static. Oh yes, the math rock band themselves are coming out with a new album today. Today being Friday, and I'm very much looking forward to being nerdy and listening to some post rock again because it's been a while.
Are you a math rock person?
No.
that was not convincing.
Not anymore, I guess. No, I guess. Do you know 65 Days of Static?
No.
They're kind of a post rock band from the US, and they've made some of my favorite albums of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're really, really, really stunning, and kind of like in the same way that we were discussing girl band, really kind of challenging emotional music, but you don't ever have to worry about lyrics. So really nice. So that's what I will be listening to. But what have you been listening to, reading, watching, consuming?
So I have been really making a concerted effort to get back into reading literature.
Okay.
I've had a prolonged burnout leaving college. I studied English and there was so much prescribed reading that I think when I left, I just had such a long burnout. And I've kind of stuck my toe in and out. But a book, this is probably the first book in a long time, couple of years, that's really blown my mind is Gregory David Roberts. Gregory David Roberts, The Mountain Shadow, which is a sequel. It's a novel, the sequel to a book called Shantaram, which is probably my favorite novel, about a passport forger in Bombay.
Mm-hmm.
And basically his tale, and he falls in with the Indian mafia. He escaped from prison in Australia. It's the first book certainly was a semi-autobiographical account from Gregory David Roberts.
It
was actually
cool.
His life. And it's this epic 1,000 page tale of his life and his exploits there. And this sequel, I feel like slightly might be fibbing a little bit.
Okay.
Might be more novel than autobiographical, but it's really fantastic. I think I've done like 450 pages in a week and a half, so I've been glued to it.
There's nothing like that book that gets you back into reading.
Yeah.
Because like, I was the same. I studied English as well. And I was like, God, if I have to read another... Like when I left, I was like, if I have to read another book, I'll die. But there's nothing like getting back into it.
Because
I've been reading... have you heard of Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert?
No.
Okay, so it's, I guess, half a self-help book and half a guide to how to like live a creative life. Or something. So it's by the lady who wrote Eat, Pray, Love.
Okay.
And so, like, this book has been recommended to me by I don't know how many different people for years. And I've always kind of dismissed it because I'm like, I don't know, like, self-help books about creativity, I'm always a little bit cynical and dubious about, because yeah. I'm like, you're ultimately selling a book and you're selling me the idea that I'm good.
Yeah.
it's selling me a piece of paper that says, well done. But a copy fell on my desk in work one day and I was just like, right, fine, I'll read it. And it's a strange read. It's an interesting read. And it's a bit kind of like, so it will talk about like the jewel of creativity that we all have inside us, as if it's a physical jewel that yeah. we all have inside us. Or it would talk about the idea that creative ideas, whether it's like an idea for your book or a melody for a song or whatever it is, are like real physical things
yes.
that exist in the universe, and they come and meet you and you have to collaborate with them. And if you don't do it in time, they'll move to somebody else.
But is this a sake for the sake of creating a metaphor in the book, or is this how the author genuinely represents creativity?
That's what I thought. No, she believes that they are real physical.
Wow.
Like, and you physically have to
meet them.
Get this idea. Yeah. So it's challenging to kind of get your head around that. So I've been enjoying reading the book as a metaphor. Every now and then she slips in a little line being like, and remember, I'm not speaking metaphorically here, I'm speaking physically. And I'm like, okay, that's quite a challenge there. But yeah, I'm getting through it and it's nice. There's the odd little nugget of just like a creative inspiration or you can do it.
Has it sparked inspiration?
The way, I mean, yeah, I guess a bit. It's just sort of, it's more just interesting to read about other people's creative processes, I think.
Yeah.
I'm always quite interested in that. And she talks about interviews that she's done with different people, and like she interviewed Leonard Cohen about his songwriting process and stuff. And I think that's the part of the book that I'm getting a lot out of. But yeah, it's kind of a mad read. Other than that, I haven't been watching much, and I haven't been listening to much other than these two albums. Yeah. What about yourself? What's on any telly?
I have a music-related telly to tie in. New series on Netflix called Top Boy.
I haven't heard of it.
It's fantastic. So it originally aired, two seasons aired in Channel 4, I think in 2011. Mm. And now they've kind of done a reboot / follow-on sequel. There's a series up on Netflix. It's essentially about, I'd kind of disparate, as in it's interwoven tales as opposed to being about a particular group, a cast of sort of black youths growing up in South London,
mm-hmm.
and their attempts to try and like make a career and make money, and you know, some are involved in criminality, some are not. Some of the main characters are kind of drug dealers. It's absolutely fantastic, and there's a ton of British rappers in it. The soundtrack, Drake did some of the bars for the soundtrack on it, but there's a ton of British actors actually rapping it. So Kano is in it, Dave, who just won the Mercury, is in it,
of course,
yeah. And Little Sims, who released my favorite hip-hop album of the year, she plays a character called Shelly, who I think is probably the best character in it.
Wow.
It's fantastic. They only have one season. I don't get to watch much TV, but I probably watched 4 or 5 episodes in the last week. Really, really enjoying it. Great. Really fantastic. Top Boy, I'd really, really recommend it.
Brilliant. I think that's probably it for us this week.
I think so.
We've done well.
We've done really well. Yeah.
3 songs. A Kanye deep dive.
It's been a classic podcast.
It has been. it's been lovely. And thanks as ever for stepping in while Niall fecks off on a holiday.
Thank you.
What does Niall do at the end now? The Patreon.
By all means, support us on Patreon.
Patreon.com/Niall9.
Absolutely.
We're doing a live podcast on the 13th of October in the Kino in Cork. Please do come along. It's free. It's at 9 p.m. And it's going to be a really good time. We'll have more information about what we're doing and what it's going to be about very soon. So keep an eye. And that's all the things, I think.
That is all the things.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Do we have a song to play us out, Luke?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to close out with new track from Irish artist Rachel Lavelle. After her sort of 2 or 3 year extended writing break, this is going to be to close us out, Perpetual Party. Thank you very much.
Bye.
some exotic dream that grips me, some hypnotic dream that lifts me and tips me over the edge. Make love to me. Meat, cute. I saw.